And a very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. John Morley here on Galway Talks for Tuesday the 16th of April. We're with you right through until 12 o'clock. Coming up on the programme today, funding for safe routes to school locally. We have a look at the Disability Reform Green Paper being rolled back on by the government. There was a documentary which features Galway United women's players and management. They join us in studio. The abortion documentary last night, did you see it? Give us your thoughts, please. We'll be discussing that with one of the participants in it. We also have plenty of music this morning. Death Milkshake is one of them, and so is You Man. All that plus lots more coming up between now and 12 midday. A very good morning to you. Very good morning to you. Welcome into Galway Talks with me, John Morley. If you want to get a comment into the programme, you can do on our text and WhatsApp line. That's 086-3833-553. You can phone Siobhan on reception on 0917700077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Now, though, I want to go to my phone lines this morning because I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by the Minister of State Responsibility for Disabilities, Anne Rabbitt. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, John.
There's good news for people in Athenry. Is Athenry Boys National School Safe Routes to School Initiative receives a lot of funding here, €160,000.
Absolutely, John, and badly needed, to be quite honest with you, because the location of anybody who knows Athenry National School, Boys National School, to be quite honest with you, it's not the safest place to get to school to if you're living in the town. So there was need there funding for the Bridge Street element of it, to ensure that safe ways, like to walk, to cycle to school, so that the children can get to their gates safely. So luckily, we secured additional funding with the help of Minister Jack Chambers there, €160,000, to enable that work to continue and to be done. There's a lot of good work going on already, but now it's to continue it in Athenry to ensure we can finish one piece of the work on to get the safe routes to school. Because, like, government at the moment are spending €1 million a day on walkways, cycleways, but it's important that they're also safe, that children can access education safely.
Okay, there's safe routes to school, but they're also green as well. I know a big focus on this is cycle routes within the community.
Absolutely, and I suppose really it's to encourage and actually children to actually start going there on foot, but it can only, parents will only have the confidence if they know that the pedestrian crossings are working, if there's lights on in the pedestrian crossings, if there is footpath all the way too. So parents don't need to actually drive to the gates, they can find a better location further away and let the children walk there, or if in some cases, if they're living in the town, in the catchment area, that they can use the footpath all the way there. Currently at the moment it isn't, as I say to you, the safest way to get there, so it needs to be completed and boxed out for the residents of Athenry.
It's very timely this, given the, I suppose, devastation on our roads over the past few months, particularly this year, Anne.
Absolutely, and I suppose really, like, what every school is continuously trying to do is actually to educate people or to create that awareness about how you can be safe, whether it is from wearing your fizzy vest to actually having the light on in your bike, but also that travels with you as you go into secondary school when you're thinking about getting your car. That whole awareness about being safe on the roads, be seen on the roads, but also we need to now bring it to the next level as to how we can actually ensure that young people, when they're doing their driving lessons, all about the whole safety, because there has been huge devastation, not just this year, but for the last number of years, and the amount of road deaths is going in the wrong trajectory completely for everybody. And I think every one of us catches a breath at this stage when we hear of another death, another devastation for a family. There's a lot of work going on with Minister Chambers and the RSA to try and get a grip of this. But I really do genuinely believe myself we'll have to go into the schools, maybe make it part of the curriculum of the TYs in that whole awareness piece as well.
Yeah, there is that personal responsibility, but there's also responsibility that's possibly beyond the remit of government as well. I know that story of the EU rules and how a lot of information wasn't been able to pass down from the RSA to the local councils, and that's caused a bit of a stir recently as well.
It has, and like the Taoiseach was very, very clear about this the other day on the floor of the Dáil. I was sitting beside him. Like, that's absolutely crazy to be hiding behind GDPR that we can't pass on this sort of information. I think when there is a safety element and there's a risk to it, I think safety and risk trumps everything. We should be able to share that information. And actually, I was also listening to another programme yesterday where they're doing awareness in the classrooms of, I think it's Mayo County Council actually, of sharing actually how the impact it has on people's lives, the devastation, not just to the person that has passed away maybe, or the person that has lost a limb or actually lost ability to perform normally, actually, but the devastation on the whole community and the family as well. I think we need to get real about actually the devastation it leaves behind, and road traffic deaths and crashes.
I know there's also moves towards having camera footage of anyone who breaks a red light at traffic lights. Is that something you'd welcome?
I think if we're serious about proper implementation of road safety measures, we have to mean that we take all road safety measures very, very seriously, and that includes red lights. There's a reason they're red. You stop, not break it. So, like, if you're one of those serial offenders, I do think there's nothing wrong with having the cameras there to record you. Absolutely not. We have to get serious about taking our responsibilities as drivers behind the wheel very seriously.
Mm-hmm. I want to move on this morning now, Minister Abbott, because there's been a lot of talk of this. I know you're the Minister of State with Responsibility for Disabilities, and I know this is outside of your department's remit, but disability rights activists have welcomed a decision by government to scrap a proposal to reform disability payments. Explain to us about this green paper, which does come from the Department of Social Protection, but it looked at tiering disability in that, and that was really rejected by a lot of people with disabilities and disability activists.
All right, so and thank you for the opportunity to speak about it. And to be very fair to Minister Humphreys, in 2021, she published the cost of disability. And out of the cost of disability, it became very clear and very apparent that having a young person, having an adult, or having anybody in the house that has a disability, there is a cost to it. And the cost outweighs actually in a lot of cases actually what a person is receiving on disability allowance. So from there, Minister Humphreys launched the consultation paper on the green paper on the cost on disability. And yes, you're quite right. It looked at tiering disability. It looked at scaling up payments within disabilities. But straight away, there was a pushback from the disability organisations, the GPOs, saying that actually creating a hierarchy within disability was wrong. This idea that you would be actually tiering it was all wrong. And to be fair to Minister Humphreys, she has listened. Like, the organisations have been very, very clear about it. My own department fed into it initially when this was launched. We ourselves had serious concerns about it. But the fact there was a consultation, and the fact that it was going out to the people to input into it, John, and the fact that the Minister Humphreys last week decided to scrap it, I do welcome it. But the problem still hasn't gone away. It still has to get addressed. It can't be left shelved. Like, having somebody, and the cost of disability report was very, very clear that having a child with additional medical needs can add a burden of an additional 12,000 a year on a family, or having somebody that needs to get their prosthetics changed that's not covered on the medical card, which can add a cost of an additional 25,000, has to get addressed, John. It's unfortunate. The green paper is now shelved. It's now scrapped, actually. I won't say shelved. It's now scrapped.
Yeah.
But we have to go back to the drawing board to address this.
Is it an uncomfortable place for government? Because on one hand, you have to look after the rights of people with disabilities. And on the other hand, you have to look at the exchequer as well.
There's a balance in it, okay. But there's a clear function there that was done with the, and I can't remember the company that did it, but when Regina Doherty was the Minister for Social Protection, she commissioned the report on the cost of disability. That actually, if you want to talk about being uncomfortable, uncomfortable was actually reading the cost of disability.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable was actually acknowledging that there's a real funding requirement required to support people with disabilities. Uncomfortable in it was actually seeing that if you had a child that needs to get a therapist, if you have a child that's on the autism spectrum or has medical needs, or if you have a person that has prosthetics, you could see actually very clearly where there was a need for an increase in support mechanism, John. Okay, that was uncomfortable for me. So I did welcome that Minister Humphreys and her department were trying to actually have this conversation out there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we have to start again, John.
And I suppose at the root of this, it's probably a deeper point, but a lot of disability rights activists and people with disabilities and their carers and their families, they would like to see the means test got rid of altogether.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm only back from our own Ardesh this weekend, and it was an item that a lot of people who stopped me to chat me, that was the biggest issue that they rose with me, John, was in relation to the means assessment piece on it. And I suppose really, as Minister of State with responsibility for complex needs, okay, within disability, children have to have a diagnosis to access a special class. Children have to have a diagnosis for the parents to get the carers or the support. So health is a needs-based, but my two other government departments, you have to have a diagnosis on it. But at all times, the third piece on it is that you actually, the whole family is means assessed to actually providing that care. So if you had an older brother that's living now in the house that has gone out to work, it's not just mum and dad that's assessed, it's all income within the household, and which actually can put people out of not qualifying. So means assessment is a piece that we have to look very seriously and are looking seriously at.
Okay. Now, in the United Nations Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, there is a charter there. When is government going to initiate and activate that charter?
Well, I spoke about it at the Ardesh, and I've spoken about it numerous times at this stage. Like, I insisted that the optional protocol was part and parcel of the programme for government. The final scoping exercise has been done on that now, John. Minister Harris has been very, very clear, or the Taoiseach has been very, very clear, as that Taoiseach, that this will be enacted in the lifetime of this government.
When will that be? Because we know we're going into the final stages of this government. It's been it's 4 years, nearly five.
Yeah, so like, so when I spoke about it about 6 weeks ago, I put a timeline of 6 months on it. So I'm saying in about four months now at this stage, John.
Okay.
That's the timeline. So and I do welcome again the Taoiseach's commentary in relation to that we will ratify the optional protocol. I welcome Minister Gorman's, and I welcome the support of Micheál Martin's on this. They're very, very clear. The parties have agreed on it's in the programme for government, and it's something that we want to see done, John.
And that optional protocol, just to put that in context for people, one of the provisions in that is that a person with a disability can actually take a case against the state if they feel like they are not being properly looked after under the items in this declaration.
Yes, it's about your rights. The optional protocol is about your rights, and it's not just your rights within health. It's your rights if you have a grievance with transport, if you have a grievance with education, if you have a grievance to do with your local authority. It's about being able to exercise your rights that you can take on the state if they're not responding to your rights, no different to anybody else.
The final point I'll make, it's aside from all this altogether, but there's a lot of kite flying in terms of what provisions will be coming up in the next budget. And I suppose people are accusing that of being election tactics as we go into an election year. What would you say to that, Minister Abbott?
Look, the whole purpose about an Ardesh, or the whole purpose when government get their opportunities to set out their stall. So above anyone ever, if you could never accuse the likes of Michael McGrath as a kite flyer. He is one of the most astute politicians and ministers for finance, and has been of deeper as well. He balances it really, really well. He is also has to set out the stall for actually what he sees as the tiering of needs at this moment.
Okay. Minister Anne Rabbitt, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks this morning.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts on all that? Get them into us on 086-3833-553. You can also phone Siobhan Reception on 091-770-077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. To some of the comments now, morning John, could you ask Minister Anne Rabbitt if transport assistance for special needs students will get a pay rise? Nothing since 2020. Good morning. Please tell Minister Rabbitt uncomfortable is in pain constantly every day, and that we are all very lucky that not everyone is uncomfortable and suffers like that. And morning John, can you ask Minister Rabbitt about, well, it's a long one, we'll have to come back to that a little later on in the programme as well. But if you do want to get your comments into us, do so straight away. I'm just looking at another line there now, and yeah, we've asked a lot of those. So if you want to get your comments in, do so, and do so straight away as well. We're going to stick with the whole area of disability reform with an opposition local election candidate next. Very good morning to you.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning, you're welcome into today's programme. Did I say I'm joined in studio by Adrian Curran of People Before Profit? He's local election candidate for Galway City Central. Adrian, good morning.
Good morning, John.
And this follows on for from our chat with Minister Anne Rabbitt as well, and the whole area of the Green Paper on Disability Reform. First off, what did you make of the Minister's remarks there?
Well, she seemed very keen to distance herself from the government's attempts to implement this tiered system of disability. And I thought it was interesting as well that People Before Profit and Solidarity have a motion in the Dáil tomorrow about disability rights and disability justice, and every aspect of what we're calling for in that motion tomorrow that come up in your conversation, the Minister said she supports. So I'll be very interested to see how her and her party actually vote on the motion tomorrow.
I suppose we talked about the optional protocol there. It was in the programme for government. We're still waiting on it. The Minister said in the next maybe 4.5 months. What do you make of that?
Well, as you sort of said, why is it taking this long? Why is it till the very tail end of this government?
What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's because people with disabilities in Ireland live in state-enforced poverty, and they know that they basically can't implement this protocol because they'd be on the hook then legally for how people are treated in the disability community. Like, for example, during COVID, the government effectively admitted that the minimum to live on was €350 a week. There's been a lot of inflation since then, so it would be higher. But people with disabilities are living on, you know, around €230 a week. And 50% of people who can't work in Ireland because of disabilities are officially classified as living in deprivation. So this is what the government are enforcing on people, you know.
And there are other aspects from it, because I know there's been different cases and different legal changes in terms of the Department of Social Protection. One of those is Catherine's Law. And put quite simply, that was that someone doing their dissertation, if they availed of, we'll say, a scholarship, they actually wouldn't have been able to get that. They'd have to forfeit their disability payment. Now, that was changed by the department. But there are instances like that where people with disabilities have been, I suppose, disencouraged from going into the workforce or excelling in different areas of their life monetarily.
It's really, this proposal to bring in the Green Paper is really, I think it's not an outlier, it's reflective of the state's ideology towards people with disabilities and people, you know, need a bit of state assistance generally. The state has a very poor record from its inception, really, of the way it treats people. And like the idea of tiering people with disability and in terms of having to prove your level of disability and this kind of thing. And it's really linked to seeing people's worth being linked to their ability to work and generate profits and this kind of thing. And interestingly, in the Green Paper proposals, it was effectively a way of trying to force people who weren't physically able to work into jobs. But there was no extra onus or obligation on employers to make any adaptions to make it easier for people to work, you know.
But to be fair to government, as I mentioned there, there is an uncomfortable area in terms of the monetary issue, the exchequer, that side of things, and then people's rights on the other side. How do you balance that? Like, no one disability is the same. And I know I'm talking very clinically about this now, and apologies for that, but this is the crux of the issue, that one disability might cost you 50,000 a year, another one might cost you 8,000 a year. So you can see from that instance why maybe a tiered system, although it might be quite a blunt instrument, would be an idea that might be worth exploring. What would your response to that be?
A couple of things on that. That might make some sense if they were proposing that the tiers would be higher than the current payments. But what they were proposing was that the highest tier would be equal to the current payment. And everybody else would have their incomes cut even lower than the current state enforced poverty, as I described it. And the other thing then about the Exchequer, the point you made there, is that the money that they would have saved from this comparatively is absolute drop in the ocean. You know, it's absolute penny pinching. There was a report yesterday that I read that there's now 1,600 Irish people with a personal wealth of over 20 million euro, and 250 of these are tax exiles who are contributing nothing at all back to the state.
Okay, so put to me this utopian vision. If people before profit are in government and they had a magic wand to fix things for people with disability, what is it? Scrap the means test and all that, and like just put it to me. How is it actually? How will it work in a real sense?
Yeah, well, if people want to see this in detail, they can have a look at the motion that we have in the Dáil tomorrow, and there's a two-hour debate from 10 a.m. and it'll be voted on tomorrow evening. But some of the measures in it are, firstly, we'll scrap the green paper, so that's a good victory for the disability activists who've been campaigning on this. We've already won that one. Non-means-tested payments that reflect the actual cost of disability, including the specific costs of having a disability and the rising costs of living generally.
Okay, so if you get rid of the means test, what do you give a uniform payment, or just put it in plain English to me, what is the solution when you do get rid of the means test?
Yeah, it would be everybody who needs or qualifies for it and that's enough to actually live on.
How much?
Participate.
How much a week?
We're not stating a figure in this. It's not a. It's not legislation. But it's a motion.
Is that not the crux of it, though? Like we need to quantify this in an Exchequer sense.
So I would say, starting point that the government themselves have set down is that apparently 4 years ago, 350 a week was the minimum to live on.
Okay.
So I'd have that plus the extra cost of disabilities plus the rising cost of living in the time since then as a starting point. I think it'd be higher than that in reality, but that's basically what the government have admitted themselves is the minimum.
But is that sustainable though? Because I suppose it depends on how many people need to avail of this and that. But we saw the payments that were given to the whole general public during COVID, but that just simply wasn't sustainable.
Economically. That's a much broader cohort of people, and it was the exceptional circumstances and all that.
But have you got economists to cost this for you?
Well, we're not proposing figures, as I said. I just answered your question there. Like, it's on the government really to come up with the legislation.
But do you want to get into government?
It is absolutely sustainable. Like, if you look at the wealth in this society, there is more than enough for everybody living here.
The wealth in this society. So do you tax the top 1%, or what kind of proposals would you, if you got into government, how do you cost this is my question to you. I know it's not your motion tomorrow night, but if you have ambitions of getting in government, you need to have a cost plan.
Yeah, so certainly a wealth tax would be a very good start.
What would that look like?
If you have very modest tax on the very, very super wealthy, you could bring in, I don't have the figures in front of me because I wasn't prepared for this, but you could bring in a significant amount. And those people would still be extremely wealthy. And I'm not talking about people who own their own house or whatever. I'm talking about the super wealthy.
Like, okay, but you mentioned them earlier, and you mentioned that some of them aren't even residing in the country. So how do you actually get around that loophole of people not living in the state and having different accounts in different countries? How do you actually get the tax?
The people I was talking about are Irish citizens who aren't paying tax here. You know, they're not people who are living abroad.
Tax avoiders.
Who aren't tax residents.
Okay. Another issue you want to bring up with us today, indeed, is the impact of Airbnb on the Galway housing crisis. Just talk to us about what you're calling for here.
Yeah, so this is obviously an issue that a lot of people are aware of and we've campaigned on before in the past. But just last week, we were canvassing for the local elections around the Prospect Hill area, and it was actually incredible. It was difficult to find houses that were actually lived in some areas with the amount of Airbnbs. It really drove it home that the problem's gone a lot worse in recent years. And obviously, everyone is very aware of the housing crisis and how it's getting worse. And there are regulations in place about properties being converted to Airbnb needing planning permission and so on. And that's supposed to be enforced by the Galway City Council in our case. Mm-hmm. And it's just not, you know, it's plain to see. You can walk around areas of the city and you can see the drop boxes on the doors and so on. Or if you have a look at the Airbnb website and search for Galway City, the other day I had a look, there was over 1,000 Airbnbs in Galway City and there was something like 36 places to rent on daft.ie, and some of those were hostel beds. So it's an incredible situation. Really, the council need to enforce these regulations at a minimum.
But is it not people's rights if they want to rent out their property as an Airbnb that they can do that?
Well, that's actually not what the law says, you know, not without permission.
So are you looking for people to enforce this?
Yeah, at a minimum, just enforce the current laws because it's not being done. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and the Simon Community Report, we discussed yesterday with Fintan Maher as well. What did you make of that? It's pretty damning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of these reports that come out, they kind of just reinforce what people already know about how incredibly difficult it is to find anywhere to rent in Galway. Like my entire generation really has been affected by this. I was evicted there myself recently. And the HAP system, which is what the report was mainly about, you know, it's what the government are doing instead of building public housing, which as they used to do when we were a much poorer country, they used to build public housing on a mass scale. Now we have this HAP system where it's basically funneling money from the public purse into private landlords, and the state has no long-term payback on this, you know, whereas if you built public housing with the money, it'd be an income in perpetuity for the state from the rents, as well as the social good of people having a secure home as well.
Well, Simon Harris is on about building 250,000 homes over the next 5 years. That must be something you welcome.
I would love to see that happen, absolutely. I do not believe Fine Gael are going to do that.
Okay. Adrian Curran, People for Profit, local election candidate for Galway City Central. Thank you for joining us on Galway Talks this morning. What are your thoughts? Get them into us, and they're flooding in this morning. 086-3833-553. That is our text or WhatsApp number. You can also phone Siobhan reception on 091-770-077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. We're looking at women in football after this.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.
Good morning and welcome to Galway Talks with me, John Morley. To your comment lines now, because there's plenty of them coming in this morning. Can you ask Minister Rabbit to make it legally mandatory for all second-level children to wear high-vis jackets, not vests, as part of their school uniforms? The parents of children who do not wear the said jackets need to be prosecuted. School uniforms in general are dark in colour, as you know, so it is extremely difficult to see children walking on the wrong side of the road in school in the dark, wet winter mornings. I have often gasped at the stupidity of parents allowing such children make their way to school on such dark mornings, completely dressed in dark grey or navy. The second level pupils making their way to their bus pickup point in different schools is a prime example, and myriads of grey clad youths with no high vis in sight. One of those days there will be a tragedy. That comes in from David. And there's also plenty more comments coming in. Morning, John. That lad you have on hasn't a clue when it comes to actual figures. That comes in from Tony. And they keep coming in this morning as well. We'll try and get to more of them after 10 o'clock. Now, though, I want to turn my attention to a new four-part series, Pass It On, Soccer Naman. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by Eve Dawson of Galway United Football Club and also by the producer of said series, Jennifer Healy. You're both very welcome onto the programme today. And Jennifer, I might start with you. Good morning. I know there's two episodes down and two more to go.
Yeah, that's right, John. Thanks for having us on. Yeah, we've two more to come. The series kind of follows in chronological order. So episode one was kind of pre-season and up to the first couple of games. Episode two continued on from that, and we're kind of at the midway point of the season in episode three next Monday.
Brilliant. And where did the idea of this come from? Because I know there's been a lot of, since 2020 in particular, women in sport. Where did the idea for this series come?
It came from a conversation I had with a colleague of mine, Kevin Brannigan. We're both big football fans, and we were talking about trying to get a project off the ground about women's football in particular. And we kind of started with Shells. I guess they were the first club that we spoke to about it, and they were on board very early on. And then we kind of said, look, we don't want to focus just on one club. We want to see what's going on in a couple of different clubs and meet the characters involved in those clubs. So we approached Beaumont and we approached Galway United, so thankfully they all came on board.
And talk about the approach. Is it kind of behind the scenes? What approach have you taken to this documentary?
Yeah, that's what we've tried to do, all right, is get a kind of behind the scenes, fly on the wall type style, you know. So the clubs were fantastic with us. They really trusted us and let us in. So we're there at the training sessions, you know, in the depths of winter, and just letting things happen in front of us, and also letting us into, you know, pre-match team talks, halftime team talks. And we tried to be, you know, to be very much in the background and to not get in the way. And they, as I said, they were brilliant and really trusting us and allowing us to do that.
Did anything about you, it surprise you? Because I know that women in sport, and particularly soccer in Ireland, it's really come on leaps and bounds in the past few years.
Yeah, it absolutely has. And I think this season for a lot of clubs, it's taken another big step forward. You know, the clubs maybe in the past didn't have facilities like, you know, access to gyms, access to strength and conditioning coaches, the things that are just standard now in the men's game. They didn't necessarily have them up until this season. So, you know, it's great to see that they really are at the same level as the men. They put in the same work. They do all of the same things. And they're treated in the same way by the clubs, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Shells and Piemont United, but you've also featured locally here, Galway United. I'd say you're glad you have as well, because they're going quite well at present.
Oh, it's fantastic to see. Yeah, I'm keeping a close eye on their season. Obviously, we got to know all the women there and the coaching staff, and they're brilliant people. So I'm delighted to see that. And yeah, like, it made sense for us to include them. You know, we knew, obviously, of the story of Galway Women's Football Club, unfortunately, had to fold last season. And it was, you know, it was that story of, that's something that happens in the game. You know, clubs can't continue on forever. It's a lot of effort from volunteers who keep them afloat. And, you know, to kind of include that part of the story that, look, this is what happened to that club, but Galway United have stepped in and they've taken in the women's team, and the incredible success. Even last season, you know, think they defied a lot of people's expectations, and it's great to see them now top of the table. It's brilliant.
And it's brilliant to see as well, because it would have been unthinkable that there wouldn't have been a women's club here in Galway, considering all the talent that there is locally as well.
Yeah, God, the talent is incredible. I mean, you know, a lot of the women playing are very young, and so that only goes to kind of, you know, it's a very positive thing, I guess, for the future of women's football in Galway too, that calibre of player is coming through so young in the game.
Absolutely. One of those talents joins me in studio this morning, Eve Dawson. Eve, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm very well. How was this documentary like for you to be a part of?
It's great. Just, I've watched it like being filmed, so after seeing it all put together, it looks amazing, and I love the way it looks.
And what did they mentioned there that they didn't want to get too intrusive and too into your face as well filming. What was it like for you to have the cameras and all that in the background during your season?
Obviously, at the start, there's a big camera in your face, but as the weeks went on, you kind of just brush it to the side, and like, you have to focus on your game and make sure you just play your game, yeah.
And how good was it for you to be a part of the newly formed Galway United Football Club? Because obviously there was a lot of consternation when the Galway Women's Club folded, but really Galway United stepped up to the mantle now and has given a great opportunity to yourself and other female players across the region.
Galway United have been really good. It's growing more and more, and people are noticing, so...
And you have a huge amount of talent, not just yourself, but the likes of Jenna Slattery and goalkeeper Abigail Ronayne. There's a lot of talent in the club being nurtured.
Yeah, there's so much good players on the team. We're all so good. So being able to play as a team, we're just getting better and better week in, week out.
And what has the season been like for you so far, Eve?
It's been really good. Unbeaten at the moment. So hopefully it stays that way.
And how many more games do you have left in the season?
Many more. Till November.
Till November, yeah. So it's a long road ahead of you, but it's great that you have had that unbeaten streak as well. I suppose, Jennifer, back to you. It's great to see young women getting such enjoyment out of it, and that you're able to highlight the work that is being done. It must have been very rewarding for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a total privilege for us to be able to witness what these women are doing. As I said, a big football fan anyway, so to see the intricacies, I guess, of, like, you know, training sessions and how tactics are laid out, to get that kind of access was amazing. I enjoyed every minute of the project. It was a long project. You know, we started in January at pre-season training, and there was some, you know, in Galway, obviously very, very wet nights and cold nights. But it was absolutely a privilege to be there and to follow the women the whole way through to November. Yeah, fantastic experience. We'd love to do it again.
Absolutely. Now, it's on every Monday night. So next Monday, there's episode 3, and then the following Monday, episode 4. What can we expect in the next two?
So the next one, as I said, it's kind of that midway through the season point, where there's a bit of a break for the Women's World Cup that happened last year. Mm-hmm. A couple of the players that we were following, you know, we focused on about three players from each club, and a couple of the players were kind of hopeful that they might get a call up to go on the plane to Australia. So we're kind of building up to that and to see what happens to them. And then obviously into episode 4, we're coming into the last leg of the season, and you know, the final thing is obviously seeing the champions being crowned.
Absolutely. I'll go back to you, Eve. Talk to us about your whole career in soccer. Where did it start for you?
Started with Saltill Devon, and then I moved over to Merivale United. Been playing there for a good while now. Mm-hmm. Then after, I went to Galway Women's and Galway United now.
And what have the highlights been for you in your playing career so far?
Really good. Even just playing for Ireland, after just there qualifying for the Euros as well, couldn't be better.
Absolutely. And I suppose we look at the different things. You were at Salthill and then you're with Merview and now Galway United. What has it been like going up the levels and seeing the different aspects? Obviously, there's going to be a change when you look at the things like the gym and the training and even the psychology of the game. What's that all that been like for you?
Really good. Obviously, it gets more intense, more higher intensity.
And you are a defender with Galway United. Who have been some of the toughest opponents you've been playing against so far? Who's really been challenging you in the Premier Division?
They're all really tough, so I don't know, I'd give it to Emma Doherty maybe.
Emma Doherty, yeah, yeah. She is really a high flyer.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Eve. And Jennifer, back to you. If people want to watch the programme, where is the best place to stream it if you've missed it and to continue watching?
So it's up on the RTE Players. Episodes 1 and 2 are up there right now. And then next Monday at 8 o'clock on RTE1, and the following Monday, 8 o'clock RTE1. And then the whole thing will be up on the player.
All right. Well, thank you indeed for joining us, Jennifer. And it is called Pass It On, Soccer Na Mon. So if you do want to watch it, go on to that RTE Player. And indeed, you can watch it on Monday and the following Monday as well. So Jennifer Healy, the producer of the series, and Eve Dawson of Galway United, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks on Galway Bay FM. Now, to your comment lines very quickly, because there are plenty of them getting in contact with us this morning. If you want to do that, do so on our number. That's 086-3833-55. You can also phone Siobhan on reception on 091-770-077 and email comments at goibayfm.ie. John, I wondered, what does Minister Anne Rabbitt think that a person on a pension which I've contributed to over my working life is now receiving only half carer's allowance, meaning the care I give is only worth half the value of a younger person just a few years younger than me? Is this not ageist and discriminatory, or what I appealed this last November, but appears to be ignored? Heard nothing back except an acknowledgement. And more calls coming into us this morning as well. Was wondering if your radio station shows could highlight this wonderful workshop in Croí Nua this Saturday. Would really appreciate it. That comes in from Francis Waldron. And I can tell you, there is a Finding Resilience and Hope When Life Knocks Us Down by Martina Lahan Sheehan, a psychotherapist and a spiritual director. And it's an interactive workshop using scripture, music, input, meditation and poetry, finding ways to heal, hope and unite. It's on Saturday, the 20th of April, from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. There is a fee as well. It's in the Cree New Spirituality Centre, Rosary Lane, Taylor's Hill, Galway. So we're very happy to give that a mention as well. Another listener asks us this morning, will you ask Minister Rabbit, when will the bus escorts get a wage increase? It's always the teachers that keep getting wage increases. And please ask her, we also need an increase. Please read this out. And another listener says, John, politicians are all talk. Is the ring road dead in the water? Same circus, different clowns. We won't go there this morning or else we'll never move on. And plenty more comments coming into us as well. Still to come on the programme today. It's jam-packed between now and 12 o'clock. We'll be looking at the abortion documentary last night and also a fundraising table quiz for the women in Gaza. Dr. Lorraine Grimes joins us to discuss all that. I saw bits of it last night and it is fairly eye-opening and hard-hitting as well. So if you have any thought process on that, you might just get them into us on our text and WhatsApp line. We also have a lovely initiative. She Rose, a Galway symposium, aims to promote women and diversity in politics. Kathleen Law, Helen Ugbu, the coordinator of SAIL Connect, and Dr. Helen Maher, the VP for Equality, Diversity and Inclusion at the University of Galway. They all join us in studio. As well as that, we have the Garda slot this morning. We have a very interesting artist joining us in the studio, and I've seen him set up. It is something to behold. He's called Death Milkshake, and he has a live looping pedal where he can play his bass guitar, he can play synthesizers, and a lot of other stuff. So that's going to be a new one for me. His new EP, Shiny Things, comes out tomorrow. We also have trending topics with Joshua Byrne, where we look at all things AI generated. We have our evergreen slot, and we also have Music Mornings, this time the turn of U-Man, a.k.a. Brian Flanagan, and he's going to play some of his new music for us. He's a new single, High Out, but he's also going to play a version of his new song, You, on the ukulele. So that's well worth listening to because he is a beautiful musician and a beautiful singer as well. I want to remind you all as well that on this coming Friday, Community Matters series, we go to Clonburr. We're in Burke's Bar and Restaurant, Chivurka in Clonburr. And I'm going to get around to all my victims, I mean guests. I'm going to get around to all my guests a little later on today because I have my targets picked out. I'm just going to give them a phone call and go through it a little later on today. But we're looking at a whole host of things in Clonburr, including the history of it. We have a lot of local characters coming on to have a bit of crack with us. We have a lot of sport in Clonburr as well. And it's a beautiful part of the country and the county indeed. As you head into Joyce Country, the two lakes either side, and it's just beautiful. So do look forward to that programme coming your way this Friday morning between 9 and 12 o'clock as well, because it is going to be a lot of fun. Sean O'Melkiran will be coming down with me to assist and to be my photographer and bodyguard and everything else in Chivurka. So thanks in advance to Sean for that. But if you do want to get involved in the Clonburr programme on ARCA, if you want to do it on Scaelga as well, you can get involved by phoning us on reception straight away, emailing comments, or indeed text and WhatsApp us to 086 38 33553 as well, because we'd love to hear from you and we'd like to get everyone we can. We also have a guy who's he's great at all the cycling and running and doing it for a good cause as well, and doing it for mental health reasons. So that's just a little snippet, but we'll give you more on Clonburr and Community Matters a little later on in the week as well, because we're coming right across the city and county this year with our Community Matters series. The next one after that will be Clifton at the beginning of May. So if you're in Clifton and you want to get involved with Community Matters and highlight what's going on in your community and some of the characters and the history and nostalgia from it, do so as well. We're with you right through until 12 o'clock here on Galway Talks. If you do want to get in contact with us, do so straight away. 086 38 33 553. Phone Siobhan on reception on 0917 700 77, and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. We're back after news right now.